Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. It's TV time, and joining me on the program today is Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, to talk formats, finales, and sci-fi. Later on in the program, we're going to be discussing carpool karaoke and, of course, Game of Thrones. But first, let's talk about something a little stranger.
99 out of 100 times, kid goes missing. The kid is with a parent or a relative.
What about the other time?
What?
You said 99 out of 100. What about the other time? The one!
Suffice to say, that poor child was not with a parent or a relative. That was the voice of a rather distressed Winona Ryder there in a clip from the latest Netflix series to take audiences by storm, Stranger Things. Alice, welcome to the show. Now, I understand that this is quite inspired by all things 1980s, sort of horror-related, the world of John Carpenter, perhaps a bit of Stephen King. It's almost obvious just from that title font, isn't it?
Yeah, that title font is a really interesting one, actually, because it's ITC Benga for typeface fans.
Wow, that's so impressive that you know that.
I have spent the last 2 days interviewing Mr. Benga about his font, so you've caught me at a particular moment. I will not bore you about that now. But yeah, so that font, from the off, it sets you in this moment because it was used on, as you say, the Stephen King books and also the Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if you grew up at that era, before the first 30 seconds are over, suddenly you're like, whoa, it's like a time warp, you know. But also the creators have done it with the music. They've done it with the kind of the outfits as much as you can do in kind of small town America. And the feel of it all is just so wonderfully, yeah, early 80s.
It's quite fitting then that they've put someone like Winona Ryder in that role, isn't it? Sort of recalling back to her time in films like Beetlejuice,
Heathers, and a little later on, obviously, Girl Interrupted.
Exactly. I'm a Winona Ryder fan, so we could list Winona Ryder movies for the rest of the show, and I would be more than happy to, but we probably shouldn't. So talking about the feel of the story itself then, when I was watching just a couple of episodes, it sort of reminded me of, well, it first reminded me of the film that came out just a few years ago, Super 8, but that itself, of course, recalled some of the other films and television of the 1980s. How did that come across to you? Were you reminded of some of your favourites, and was that enough to make you enjoy this modern incarnation?
Well, the thing is, and we've been talking about this so much on the arts desk at The Telegraph because there are some people who are just completely obsessed, and I'm a little bit too young to get really into the 80s references. So for me, I'm coming at it from a kind of pop culture perspective, and I recognise the music and I do recognise the feel of it, but it's really interesting to watch other people get obsessive about a weird aspect of a like video game they played when they were a kid, or E.T. is an obvious reference as well. And it is that it's that all immersive inspiration which is so amazing. They've not just gone from the really obvious stuff, they've also gone for some weird niche Dungeons and Dragons-esque vibes as well. So pretty much everyone is going to find an inspiration here.
So really what you're saying is that you're younger than me and that all of our listeners will now know that I'm old enough to remember all of those 1980s. I probably wasn't old enough to be watching those back then, just to be clear. So then let's talk about this as specifically a Netflix series. How do you see this fitting in amongst the wider Netflix family, or does it really not fit in?
I think it doesn't fit in at all. I mean, the first thing to note is that it's only 8 episodes long, which in the UK is the kind of standard series length, but in the US, that's very short. Even on Netflix, most series are kind of between 13 and 20 episodes long. So it's an anomaly in that case, but also it's quite weird. I mean, Netflix have ventured into, there's been a few weird horror things on there in their original series, but no, this is the first proper kind of big high production sci-fi thing they've put out. And I think part of the reason why people are getting really, really into it and they're not getting into other Netflix originals, which are coming out thick and fast at the moment, is because it is genuinely different.
You are quite right. Every time I log on to Netflix, I seem to see another series that that I haven't actually really heard much about. And that's quite odd, isn't it? Because Stranger Things has been attracting, as you say, quite a bit of attention, yet they seem to roll out some of these other series that don't attract a whole lot of attention. it does seem as though they're not exactly bulletproof when it comes to putting quality out there.
I think the way that Netflix used to do their originals is that they would put a lot of time and money into a few select shows, and now I don't know how their commissioning process has changed, but they're clearly, you know, playing a bit of suck it and see. They put enough out that there's always one Stranger Things, but there's also quite a lot of maybe less strange things.
For every Stranger Things, there is a Bloodline.
Yeah.
Stranger Things is available right now to stream on Netflix. Now, let's change channels now to Carpool Karaoke. This is actually a segment from CBS's The Late Late Show that a lot of listeners are probably familiar with. Now, for those who aren't, it sees host James Corden drive around town with a celebrity, casually chatting and singing along to the radio. Take this recent example of Corden with Michelle Obama.
Do you mind if we listen to some music? I rarely get to listen to music in the car.
Sure. Well, what? I mean, let's see.
What you got?
I don't know. Let's see what we've got.
Crank it up.
Oh! Stevie! No way!
Did you know that Stevie Wonder is my favorite?
He's the best!
Like a fool, I went and stayed too long.
Is James Corden there singing along to Stevie Wonder with Michelle Obama. Now, Carpool Karaoke has been a runaway hit with nearly every episode going viral and racking up a total of over 800 million views. And this set television networks and streaming services' tongues wagging. Now, the reason we're talking about this today is because Apple has turned out to be the surprise buyer of the format, and they apparently plan to distribute it on Apple Music. Now, Alice, I'm going to assume that you're going to be as perplexed about this as I am, but what on earth is a television program doing on Apple Music?
Well, let's roll this back a little bit, because already Carpool Karaoke is something that is quite unusual to the classic US late show format. So, you know, this is a classic kind of chat show thing, and, you know, they vie for ratings on TV. But James Corden has said, I don't care about ratings. I only care about the relevance, and I care about YouTube hits, because every single week there's a Carpool Karaoke on YouTube. Everybody can watch it wherever they are in the world. And as you say, it gets millions of views. He's relevant. He's in the conversation. Now, that is what Apple wants to do as well. Apple wants to be relevant. They want to be in the conversation, and they want to have the music or the clips that nobody else has. And so what they've done is they've clocked onto the biggest internet hit going. And in a way, we've seen this trend coming for a while. It's the same way that Tidal released Lemonade, which was Beyoncé's entirely visual album. You know, music and video have been going in hand in hand ever since the YouTube generation got hold of that. That's the way a lot of younger people listen to music. So for them, it'd be totally natural that if they're subscribing to Apple Music, they don't just get the music, they get video series as well. It's like MTV 2.0.
But then, interestingly, okay, James Corden, he doesn't care about ratings. He wants to be relevant. Fine. He's still the host of a television show that is broadcast on a traditional network, CBS, one of the big networks. They certainly care about ratings. How much does that play into his concerns as a broadcaster on CBS?
Well, I think by the fact that he's exec producing Apple Music's new non-James Corden-fronted Carpool Karaoke, he's got his fingers in other pies. I mean, it's interesting that James Corden's Late Late Show, was never up there with, say, you know, Jay Leno or the other really big ones. It's kind of, that's why they, you know, hired a chubby British guy to come and front it. It was never one of the massive ones anyway. So for James Corden, I'm not sure if he cares that much, because he's clearly getting involved with new, more innovative ways of broadcasting.
Mm. So do you think that it will continue to be a segment on The Late Late Show then?
Yeah, they said that, yeah. So he's going to have his cake and eat it.
Wow. Okay.
So many food puns, right? Sorry, James Corden.
It's nothing personal, I'm sure. So how do you see this changing things for Apple Music then? Because that has been a platform that has been, its rollout hasn't exactly been completely smooth. How will this alter the way that that is then maybe consumed by its subscribers?
Well, what it's doing, you know, so Apple Music's biggest contender is Spotify, who doesn't at the moment offer any unique content. And Tidal, who, as I said, are kind of edging into it, but it's still strongly tied to the music. So now they're they're going multi-platform, basically. They're offering the subscribers something different. So you won't just get the music. It could be something that could set them apart. I mean, that's surely what they're hoping for. At the moment, people are tossing up the question of, do we pay for Apple or do we pay for Spotify? If you're going to get Carpool Karaoke and you love James Corden Carpool Karaoke, you'll probably pay for Apple Music.
So presumably, if this then goes forward and it is quite successful, what we're really potentially looking at is the blurring of a music streaming service into an all-round entertainment platform, perhaps in a similar sort of way to the way that MTV went from being, in the 80s, of course, something that was purely for music videos into what is now free of music videos completely.
It's my Super Sweet 16, etc. Yeah, exactly. So that's what MTV has done, and I can see this going the same way. There's probably more money to be made in original content than music. That's been shown for the last 10 years or so. Yeah, it's a slightly exciting and vaguely terrifying prospect, I'd say.
So then taking a look at some of the other competitors then, we have still got Google, of course, being the owner of YouTube, Google also having their own music subscription service, Google Play. Some predictions from you, do you think that we might actually see Google start to merge some things on the other side of things here and become a bit more of a competitor to Apple?
So the one thing that Google Play really doesn't have going for it is it's got a really weak catalogue, but so has Apple. I mean, they're just kind of, they're basically shop windows to going and buying stuff on their separate stores. So both of them could benefit from producing some original content. Now, I wouldn't be surprised that Google Play will try and catch up from where Apple is going. I mean, they've been long competitors.
And then, of course, there's Amazon Prime as well, but we won't even get started on that terrible music interface. Well, Apple Music will release a Carpool Karaoke episodes on a weekly basis. Production is expected to begin soon, with a premiere date to be announced. And now Game of Thrones fans will be lamenting the recent announcement from HBO that the show is set to end after its eighth season in 2018. Still a little while to go. There's still a way to get there, of course. Alice, what has the reaction been so far? Panic is setting in, I expect?
Yeah, I think panic's been setting in among the hardcore fans for the last couple of seasons, because if you really love your Game of Thrones books, they've strayed away from there for a couple of seasons now. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of the death knell in some ways. And I think everyone knew it was going to be over. And what's been so curious to watch is that HBO have been managing to keep the hype up. And, you know, and so they've already said that season 7, which is the next season, will only have 7 episodes instead of 10, which was vaguely devastating news for some people, I suppose. And yeah, this is it, apparently. Although it's interesting, after I think it's Corey Blaze, the head of programming at HBO, said that there was only going to be 8 seasons. A kind of an HBO spokesperson rushed out and sort of said, well, he just said there was going to be an 8th season, didn't say it was going to be the last one. So I don't know whether that's a rather hasty retraction or trying to pull some wool over eyes. Either way, the end is coming. You know, winter is coming. I mean, go on forever.
Exactly. 8 seasons is a fairly healthy run on television, isn't it?
It's incredible, yeah.
I mean, we had, not too long ago, Breaking Bad, of course, was the place to be, the show to be
right.
watching. And that, of course, decided to end itself after
just five seasons.
Was it after 6 seasons?
It was 6, but they sort of split it in half. So it all got a bit confusing mathematically.
So, I mean, it is it's the honourable thing to do, isn't it? To end while
to
you're on top.
Out. Yeah. And what the challenge they've got in their hands is making the story work, because obviously you've got millions of people invested in this very complicated narrative, and you've got to give the finale everyone was hoping for, which is something that Breaking Bad actually managed to achieve perfectly.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, there are talks, of course, of a spin-off perhaps being in the works. What are your thoughts on this? And are there any obvious characters that stick out to you?
Well, it depends whether you're coming from a book reading perspective. George R. R. Martin has already said that there are some bits of his books that he would love to make a spin-off of, but that's going to be a bit less Game of Thrones and a bit more, you know, Adventures of Robin Hood, I think. As a TV viewer, I'd say, you know, the standout characters are Tyrion. Who wouldn't want to watch more of Tyrion? In my head, there's a kind of weird comedy between the Hound and Arya, just like globe-trotting around Westeros. That would be brilliant in my mind. We want to know what happened to Hodor. You know, has he become a White Walker? That Yeah, who knows?
A lot of potential, obviously.
Yeah.
The spin-off is a bit of a sketchy territory in TV land, though. It can go wonderfully right, and, well, if it does go right, we often forget that they were spin-offs to begin with. I'm thinking something like Laverne and Shirley, for instance. No one really remembers that being a spin-off until you run and check or remind yourself. But then, of course, there are the spin-offs that go terribly, terribly wrong, things like the spin-off to The Golden Girls, which no one ever remembers anymore. The spin-off to Bewitched, that no one knows ever existed at all.
Joey after Friends.
Exactly, yeah. Joey. The spin-off is a terrifying place to be.
Yeah.
Do you think that they could actually muster it? If they managed to get enough of the original talent and the Game of Thrones talent, it would almost be as though Game of Thrones hasn't actually ended.
Yeah, and I think that's what they might avoid, because that's what... Well, saying that, Better Call Saul was that kind of spin-off. After Breaking Bad, there was this huge appetite for more, and so they did the Better Call Saul spin-off, and it worked because it was a prequel in a way. I think they will have killed off so many members of Game of Thrones that I'm not sure how they're going to bring them back, but there are lots of people who would be curious to see how.
Indeed. We'll have to stay tuned to that one then. That does bring us to the end of today's show, though. Thanks to my guest, Alice Vincent. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our literary review. But for now, thanks for listening and bye-bye.